Welcome back to the Combat Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peacock, 4-3 black belt in Taekwondo and a martial arts skill training specialist. If you're new to the show, please sign up to the Combat Learning newsletter at combatlearning.com/newsletter. I'll send you cheat sheets on how to transform your drills into maximum skill building games and get you up to speed on the science of motor skill learning for martial arts. Plus, you'll never miss a show. Go to combatlearning.com/newsletter. to get those resources now. Today, I'm joined by Matt Philly, a mobility training coach and founder of Primal Mobility. Whether a grappler or striker, most martial artists need greater mobility. However, most of the mobility routines you see around Instagram really won't cut it. And stretching isn't necessarily good mobility work either, at least on its own. In this episode, Matt unpacks his approach to mobility training, not simply as a stretching routine, but as an approach to strength in progressively deeper ranges of motion. Primal mobility is unique in that it feels more like accessory exercises inside of a strength program than a stretching protocol, including sets and reps. In the second half of the episode, we dive into more grappling and striking specific advice on building and maintaining mobility. Topics include guard play and guard retention, bridging, as well as higher, more powerful kicks. Finally, we discuss the importance of training outside of neutral spine and in compromised positions to help prevent injuries during the course of real-life combat sports performance by building more strength in those positions. A quick note, Matt doesn't come from an ecological dynamics or CLA framework. I've had other guests on that aren't ecological before, but I haven't done a good job of making that clear. I just had him on because I thought this was a really interesting, useful, and different way to approach mobility. If you're excited to jump in, hit the subscribe button on your podcatcher and enjoy the show. And if you're listening on YouTube, be sure to hit that like button too. All right, man. Welcome to the Combat Learning Podcast. Could you go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them what you do?
100%. Again, thank you for having me on, man. Appreciate the opportunity to chat about mobility training. This is something that I could literally go on and on about for hours and days and weeks and months, and I literally do. But anyways, to introduce myself, my name's Matt. I'm the founder and CEO of Primal Mobility. We're a strength-based mobility coaching company that is now leaning into the education world as well. And we follow a process that helps take athletes or get athletes from restriction, joint restriction, muscular tissue restriction, to feeling free and strong and well-controlled in deep ranges of motion. So we follow not necessarily just a process that's going to have people stretching for long periods of time, but we really focus on helping people feel like they're strong and powerful and confident within those ranges of motion, so that when they get exposed to those ranges in their training or in competition or in life, there's no second thought. They just feel confident within the ranges. So that's kind of the approach we take and how we serve our people.
Awesome. Yeah. So you alluded to the differences between mobility and mere flexibility. Could you dig a little bit deeper into the differences between mobility and flexibility as ways of training?
For sure. So the way I like to kind of describe it, or the way I see it, is, and I like to look at things in a very open-minded way and kind of philosophically. And the way I see it is that, like, flexibility is more kind of capacity. It's more of what your joints can currently handle. Like, what range of motion can they handle? Like, where can you be exposed to? And then mobility is more like, what can you control? What can you manage within that capacity, right? So we're looking at flexibility is more along the lines of just passive range of motion, ranges of motion that you'll need to essentially be pushed into, but you still have access to. And mobility is, what can you actively control without being pushed into it? So, like, any static stretch you see, like the pigeon stretch is a super common stretch, right? You're able to get into, like, a lot of glute length. You're able to stretch out your hips and your glutes to a pretty wide range But if I were to ask you to try and pull your hip there with the control of your muscles, like actively engaging your muscles into that same position, there's going to be a huge gap between what you can actively put yourself into versus what you're able to push yourself into. And what we like to do is try to bridge that gap as much as possible so that you can be as active in the deepest ranges of motion that you can without simply only being able to be pushed into them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I know that, you know, my background is in traditional martial arts. We do a lot of like leg swings and stuff, and that tends to work a little bit better than static stretching in terms of just being able to kick in that range. But a lot of kicks, like an axe kick, for example, you can get your foot up there and you could just toss it up there and like let gravity take it. But you actually, you need control. And most people who can throw their leg up there with abandon, they can't really control it on the way down. And by, you know, in controlling it, that the importance obviously there is in sparring, you don't want to just fly the leg to fly up there and just plop down on somebody. But if you're in competition, controlling it means you can also put more power behind it if you needed to, instead of just relying on gravity. So mobility, that's attractive to me because it approaches it by making you strong in that range and not just capable of reaching the range.
100%. I think that there's definitely, sorry, I'm just going to move my seat down here. I think that there's definitely some value and like some nuances to the process, right? So if you're looking at those leg swings that you're describing, those are definitely a great opportunity to kind of have a real quick influence over the range of motion and see some fast progress, right? So you'll have to do those every single session to get back to that same point that you felt after doing those, right? Because what we're doing is mobility training really is a game of influencing the nervous system. And in order to create long-lasting ranges of motion that you feel strong and controlled within, we need to have a good, strong influence over that nervous system. We have to build trust in the nervous system that we can manage those ranges of motion. And the process in doing that is through control, through the development of strength. So if we're doing our leg swings, that's great to have like a quick short-term influence over the nervous system, showing like, hey, I'm going to want to use these ranges of motion in the next little bit. Let's start opening them up. So that's what it's a great opportunity for. And then those ranges of motion are just going to go right back to normal because your body doesn't trust that you can handle those ranges of motion under pressure without possibly leading to injury, right? So for example, if I could use this in another perspective to kind of create a different analogy here, would be like if you're walking on a winter day and you slip on a patch of ice. I'm Canadian, so this one really resonates with me. If you slip on a patch of ice and then get tossed into the splits, right? If you have poor influence over the nervous system, if your nervous system doesn't trust that you can handle those ranges of motion, you're going to reach your stretch reflex really, really quickly. And your stretch reflex is going to contract the muscles in the attempt to try to help you avoid getting into that deepest split position. And that muscular contraction, it's neurological, you have no control over it in the short term. That muscular contraction could ultimately lead to an injury, right? A torn hamstring or groin or whatever the case
groin,
is.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is show the body that if we get into those positions, like again, like if you're slipping on a patch of ice, we want to show the body, like build trust that you can manage those ranges of motion. And the only way to do that is to have or instill a process of muscular contraction and engagement within those ranges of motion. Your body will start to see, oh shit, sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on your show or not.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Like, oh shit, we're going to want to use these ranges of motion again. I'm going to hold on to them just to make sure I don't get, you know, pushed into these ranges and risk injury in the future. So your body tends to hold on to them for a longer period of time if there is muscular contraction and engagement within those ranges. I'm hoping I'm not getting too jargony here.
No. Yeah, this podcast tends to be, I mean, if every time I post something on Reddit regarding the other stuff we talk about, there's always like 10 midwits that are upset because I used a word that they don't like because it's a too jargony or something. So yeah, it's not at all. We're the listeners here are very technical people. Even if they've never heard the term before, they're probably looking at Google as soon as they listen to this.
Right.
But that does, in terms of influencing the nervous system, that sounds a bit like PNF stretching, but you said you approach it like a strength training protocol. So how does it differ to PNF stretching?
So PNF stretching absolutely is, there is a muscular contraction within that process, right? There's multiple muscular, multiple isometric contractions through the various different ranges. And the intention behind that is a quick influence over the nervous system. So PNF stretching is a technique that we use. It helps us gain new ranges of motion. It helps us quickly overcome and quiet the stretch reflex so that we can access the deeper ranges of motion and then start to build strength within them. So our process that we follow, which we call the primal method, that process takes people from flexibility to mobility. We start the process with building new ranges. There's five pillars in our process. And we start the process at build new ranges and work our way through stability, movement control, and strength. So when we're, sorry, tons of notifications here. When I say we're approaching it as a strength protocol, the ultimate goal is strength. And the way we apply it, the way it's delivered to our members is in a familiar approach that is very similar to a traditional strength protocol. So you're going to see sets and reps. You're going to see pauses, tempo. You're going to see supersets, maybe circuits, stuff like that. So it's a very familiar structure to the program in terms of like how it's delivered. But it really is like the perspective is the ultimate goal is strength. That is what we are trying to achieve in. But the only difference is that there's a slightly different perspective to it. It's range of motion as opposed to just full body total strength, right? Our goal is range of motion in the deepest ranges of our joints, or sorry, strength in the deepest ranges of our joints.
Excellent. So let's switch gears here. I've heard you talk a little smack about yoga, right? Yoga isn't going to be as useful to martial artists as they assume it will. Why is that the case?
So I find that a funny topic. There's definitely a ton of controversy around that. And at the end of the day, I don't care what you do. Whatever you do, like, what I care about is that you're applying your range of motion. That I actually do care about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm most concerned about is if you're actually applying your range of motion. In what capacity you do that, that's totally up to you. I couldn't care less. But the control and the strength within those ranges of motion is extremely important, especially when it comes to different martial arts that are going to expose those ranges of motion in a relatively intense way. Jiu-jitsu is a really great example of that because submissions are essentially applying being exposed to extreme ranges of motion, like if you're looking at a Kimura or an Americana or whatever, right? Like your shoulders are being pushed into deep internal or external rotation. If you don't have good, first of all, flexibility to get in there and use those deep ranges of motion, that's obviously like step number one. We need to make sure that you're safe being pushed into deep ranges of motion. But what do you do when you're trying to fight back against that? You may not have any strength or control within those deep ranges of motion. So that in itself is my main perspective is we need to foster strength so that we can encourage more resiliency against compromised positions, as opposed to just exposing us to these ranges of motion and gently moving through them. We need to kind of mimic that intensity a little bit. We need to kind of bring some of that intensity that we're going to see in the real world. Like if you're slipping on a patch of ice it's intense getting into that split position. You're not moving into it slowly. You're getting chucked into that position. And we want to make sure that your body has been adapted to a relative intensity that's going to, you're going to be able to sustain something like that. So in the case of jiu-jitsu, when you're being cranked in deep neck flexion in a guillotine or a Kimura in shoulder internal rotation, you need to have been exposed to some kind of intensity within those positions in order to not lose control. And then inevitably at some point, something bad may happen, right? So the whole goal behind it is reducing, having as much control over resiliency as possible. And in my experience and in my expertise over the studying and research and everything else that I've done, strength truly is the most functional approach.
Yeah, I hurt my shoulders years and years ago. And I went to the orthopedic surgeon, had them checked out. They didn't need surgery or anything, but I was like, at first, I'm stretching them a lot like that, because that's what everyone thinks, right? Oh, it hurts, so stretch it. And that's all the advice you always get. And I couldn't figure out why they hurt so much. And so the orthopedic surgeon is running my arms and my shoulder and everything through all the different tests they do, the practical tests that they do. And they're like, well, your range of motion is really good. So I don't know, here's a paper that has like some generic strength exercises on it, and go home. I was like, okay. So like the internal and the external rotations, they actually did help, because it was building strength there, but it was like a 5-pound dumbbell. And it wasn't until years later, like last year, that I started doing like more barbell stuff, and I started doing overhead presses and then like heavier flies and heavier internal and external rotations. And then all of a sudden, this shoulder pain and instability I'd had for almost a decade just disappears in like 2 months. It's just gone. And my jiu-jitsu game plays, I can fight for underhooks without feeling like my shoulder's going to tear off. And at that point, I was like, I was sold on strength training, like all the way around, not just getting stronger, but like getting rid of old nagging injuries and getting rid of pains. And now I tell people are like, oh yeah, I'm hurt, so I'm stretching. And I'm like, maybe you don't need to stretch it. Maybe you should stop stretching it. Maybe you should start like strength training within that range, like do something to build the muscle, because really it might make it worse. You might continue to aggravate it if all you do is stretch it.
Yeah. I mean, functional training in itself, like that's something I just kind of brought up, was the term functional. And the word functional in the fitness industry is like, that is also a buzzword, right? Mobility training, that's a buzzword. Functional, the word functional is a buzzword. If you hear that, a lot of people are just putting it in their marketing because people want to hear functional, because they want their training to carry over into everything else they want to do, their hobbies, their life, whatever.
Right.
All movements, this is totally my opinion, and this is also a controversial opinion relatively, is all exercises are functional in some capacity. Everything has a purpose. Everything will serve an additional purpose outside of the fitness realm, right? Like just because a bicep curl works the glory muscles and you get to see like a sweet pump on your bicep doesn't make it any less functional than potentially another exercise, right? That's going to serve a purpose for you in everyday life. Now, that being said, strength is the most functional thing that you could possibly have. You need to have strength in order to reduce risk of injury. So the more strength training you're applying into your protocols, the better you're going to feel in basically everything else. Now, that kind of has a caveat to it, because and this goes to one of the most like simple pieces of advice that I could offer somebody, is just, it depends on the ranges of motion you're applying to the stimulus, right? Yeah. So if you're doing an exercise, like a half rep of your bicep curl, that range of motion, that 90 degree, like that little range of motion that you're going to be working there, that's going to get extremely strong. But what about the rest of it? That area is not going to be strong. You're still going to be relatively compromised in comparison to that other portion of the bicep.
Right.
You're still going to feel weak as soon as you get into that position, right? It's like when you do a bench press, and if you like just barely tap the chest or just stop just above the chest, you're going to train that. You're going to feel really strong in those ranges of motion. But as soon as we say no, you got to bring the barbell all the way down to the chest, pause there for a second, and then press up. You're going to feel weak down there, right? Like, it depends on the range of motion that you're exposing to the load and the stimulus. And now going back to one of my biggest pieces of advice is simply expose your joints to greater ranges of motion, expose your muscles to greater ranges of motion under loading. So when you start to get into your training, go through full range of motion. That's going to help you not only develop range of motion, like your body's just going to start to feel better deeper into your positions, but that's a great way to maintain your range of motion and your strength and your mobility and longevity for the long period of time, right? Your body will hold on to those ranges of motion because you are maintaining that trust within the nervous system. The nervous system won't create an environment of a more excitable stretch reflex that will make that range of motion feel tight again, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people can just start making progress. And if like the first thing they want to start doing to start implementing their range of motion a little bit better and just seeing how they feel, start going through more range of motion. Like when you're doing your dips, bring your chest farther down into your dip, let your shoulder go into deeper extension, let the chest stretch out a little bit more, like flies. Open up that chest. You know what I mean? Like expose your joints, expose your tissues to wider range of motion under the load. And that in itself is so simple. Like you don't have to start a stretching protocol. You don't have to, whatever. Like this is just something that you can do in your following your regular training protocol, assuming that you're lifting weights, which everyone should be. Assuming you're lifting weights, continue following your regular training protocol, just move through more range. Now, initially, you may need to reduce the loading a little bit because you're going to be exposing new ranges of motion that are definitely going to be weaker. But in the long run, you're going to find that this has a huge benefit to how you feel, how you perform, and everything else. So I think that's a huge, simple takeaway that people can start doing is like, how do I improve my mobility to start with? Start moving through more range of motion under your loads.
Great. I think one of the reasons why people like yoga is they also like some of the, like the breath work. Do you ever incorporate that into mobility training? Do you work on breathing?
Yeah. And I definitely agree that there's an element of meditation to yoga as well, which is extremely beneficial, right? Especially in this, with the way the society lives these days. There is an insane amount of stress and a poor management system of that stress, right? So meditation and breath work and all that stuff can really help minimize that and help people feel better in general. I'm all for it. The aspect of breath work, again, when I say that the mobility training is a game of influencing the nervous system, the way you breathe and the rate at which you breathe and how you are breathing also has an influence on the nervous system. Like that's kind of part of it. If you're breathing really rapidly, your nervous system's going to be firing up. Your nervous system's going to be ready for action. If you're taking nice, deep, slow breaths, you're priming the system for recovery and rest and calm, right? So the nervous system will respond to you the way you breathe. So yes, we absolutely do talk about breath work, but it's not like breathing exercises. We just implement it within the approach that we do. So the majority of our exercises that where it really truly matters, we're going to cue some form of breathing. Like here, take a deep breath in on this portion of the movement, take a nice exhale and really reach for these ranges of motion on your exhale. Like that's kind of the approach we take because in some cases, we want to calm that nervous system to allow us to access those deeper ranges of motion where we can then fire them up and strengthen within them. Because again, it's like an ongoing balance of what are you doing to the nervous system in order to achieve the goal that you're trying to get. So when you're dealing with the nervous system, it inherently becomes more complex. But everything we do at Primal Mobility, we aim to simplify things as much as possible so that it's just more approachable for anyone to be able to get into mobility training and improve their life. So breathwork in itself can be in its own protocol. That's something that like there's inherent complexity to that. You can absolutely have a whole protocol around breathwork. We don't touch on that. What we do is kind of just cue, like brief cues on what you should be doing with your breath and how that's going to kind of pair up with the approach or with the goal, sorry, of improving mobility as a result.
Excellent. Yeah, it's more like in that sense, it's similar to a stretching program. A lot of really good stretching programs are very focused on the breath. That's a big thing for us in martial arts, is really focusing on our breath, not just while stretching or doing exercise, but also managing our breathing as we're exerting ourselves in sparring or while we're rolling. So I like that. Yeah, it's very good. I'd like to switch gears here and get a little bit more sport specific. How can mobility training enhance jiu-jitsu performance, say for like guard play?
Yeah. So I've been doing jiu-jitsu now for a year and a half. So I'm pretty fresh in the scene. I have two stripes on my white belt. I'm basically a pro, but you know,
looking for sponsors.
Yeah. So, as far as like the high level nuances to a lot of the movements, I'm still so fresh in it that I can't really offer too much insight into all that, but I'm at a point now where I do understand the basics, the fundamentals of what's happening. And I'm not sure, like I can only speak to what is taught at my school, right? I can't necessarily speak to what is taught in the grand scheme of jiu-jitsu because I don't necessarily go and do a ton of research on it. I just don't have that much of the time. And this is a relatively high level passion for me, but it's not something that I'm absolutely laser focused on. So again, everything I'm going to say, take it with a grain of salt, simply because I'm going to be referring to things that I'm taught in my school.
Sure.
But guard play and just kind of like control in general, when it comes to jiu-jitsu, there's a lot of like consuming space, right? Like if you're in the offensive position, you're trying to take away space from the opponent. You're trying to control their movement as much as possible. So you want to avoid the amount of gaps between you and your opponent. Now, a lot of what's happening there happens to be internal hip rotation. Like you're squeezing the person with your knees in many cases, right? So when you're squeezing the person with your knees, you're pulling, you're of course engaging the adductors, you're engaging your groin muscles and having to squeeze like that. But you need internal hip rotation, especially as you start to squeeze and then move your legs out, like move your foot outward. This is really hard to kind of explain without demonstrating. But if you're squeezing your knees together and then pushing your legs out, your hips need to move into internal hip rotation. This is one of the biggest limitations that we see at Primal Mobility is poor internal hip rotation.
Gotcha.
And I think that strength in that position can go such a long way in terms of maintaining that control and not gassing out in your guard early on, right? So if you're a guard player and you're somebody who gets into the guard frequently, naturally that's going to help you build up strength and control within those positions because you're using the ranges of motion. Like your body is exposed to the stimulus frequently because you're there more often. But if you don't have much strength within it, you're going to gas that position relatively quickly and you may cramp in your hips relatively easily. You may be more likely to, if you don't have good range of motion there at all, in general, you may be more likely, more susceptible to injury. So internal hip rotation is going to go a long way in maintaining guard play and stuff like that. Now, guard retention, that's like somewhat of a different ball game because somebody can pass your guard, but you getting it back is going to require you to put your hips in a whole bunch of weird different positions in order to open up and get that position back, right? So the more range of motion and control you have within your ranges of motion in your hips, the better you're going to be at. And I feel like this is obvious information for the majority, but it's stuff that I think about. The better you're going to be at getting that guard back. So this is one of the things I hear constantly when rolling with my peers at jiu-jitsu, whatever belt they are, is that I'm a total bitch when it comes to trying to pass my guard and keeping my guard away. Cause I like a decent shrimp, and then I can get my knees into crazy positions, create space, and then get my guard back. No problem. Like my hips, I have good range of motion cause I practice it all the time, right? Like I train that. Mm-hmm. But if you have solid range of motion, if your hips can open up really well, and if you can control and access those ranges with control and strength, you'll easily get into like gaining your guard back and holding onto those positions a lot easier and less likely to kind of like lose your guard as a result and lose control of the individual too.
Yeah. And the extension's easier because your hips are not just flexible enough to fit in that position, but strong in that position.
Extension in terms of like hip extension, or like
able to getting a butterfly hook and pressing away, or with the shin, across the shin. You know, if you get your knees in or something like that, depending on which one you have, both of those, when you're trying to retain guard, you usually try to extend a little bit, create some space so that you can reposition yourself advantageous position.
Like, yeah. And if somebody's in like side control or something like that, like a big bridge, a big bump to get them off of you, you need like full body extension, right? Like not just your hips, but your spine too. If your hips can't get into deep extension, you're going to struggle to get like a good glute contraction. And the glutes and the hips are the powerhouse of energy in the body. If you have good hip range of motion and good strong glutes, it doesn't matter how much the person weighs on top of you, they're likely going to fly off when you do like a big, powerful bridge, right? So getting into those positions requires you to be exposed to them more frequently. And that's something that I do on a regular basis, just because that's what I do for work and it's my passion. It's something I'm very curious about. So I explore movement a lot. But extension, like moving my spine through extension and getting my hips into deep extension, definitely something that goes a long way for performance in jiu-jitsu and life in general. Like if you're out running, if you're, you know, that kind of stuff, anything that requires hip extension is going to go a long way.
Right. So in terms of like a striking, like somebody that has kickboxing or taekwondo, let's say that I don't have good range of motion for like my axe kick and my side kick and stuff, and I want to improve it. Can mobility training improve both the flexibility and the strength through those higher ranges of motion at the same time?
So a good mobility program is going to have elements of flexibility training within it. So yes, like the short answer is definitely like if you're following a mobility, like a legitimate strategic mobility based approach, then yeah, you should definitely be seeing access to new ranges of motion for sure. Like you should be able to experience new ranges of motion through the protocol. But that being said, like even just the more trust you build in the nervous system in the deeper ranges of motion, the more likely and the more willing that nervous system is going to be to grant access to more range, right? So if you look at a PNF stretch, as soon as you apply that that muscular contraction, that isometric contraction, you magically gain access to maybe like an inch or two more of range of motion, right? You're magically able to stretch deeper now, and all you did was contract your muscles. Your nervous system, once you have a little touch of influence over it, once you gain a little bit of trust within it, starts to give you access to a little bit more. Starts to show, okay, you can handle that. Here, let's see if you like what you can do in these deeper ranges of motion. So That being said, if you're gaining mobility, you're going to gain a bit more opportunities as a result, right? So you're opening the window a little bit more. The door to more ranges of motion is being opened a little bit, and you're gaining the opportunity to access more just because you're fostering more strength in deeper ranges.
Gotcha. So one of the stretches that tends to be really good, like maybe for sidekick, is like a frog stretch. Would mobility training, how would you change that? Because we don't load it at all. We just do the stretch. We do our breathing in there for a set period of time, and then that's about it. So how would you change that as a mobility trainer?
Well, loading, like if we really look at what loading is, it's just force, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a stimulus, it's stress. And we can certainly do that without any external loading. We can apply that through our own internal ability, right? So if we're in a frog position, like we have a bunch of different frog exercises, and like I would say 6 variations of the frog, and they all have like a slightly different purpose and a different way to move through them and apply loading and intensity. And the way that's done is like, let's say you get into a deep frog stretch, squeeze your knees together. Right? The floor is in the way, so your knees aren't going anywhere, but your groin's going to be contracting in that deep range of motion. So now you're pressing essentially your body weight against the floor. So you're going to feel a good, strong contraction in the groin. Now, another way to look at this is let's get into that deep frog's position and lift your feet off the ground without any other movement of your body. Now your hips are focusing on engaging the muscles responsible for internal hip rotation. And again, you're fighting gravity, right? So you're engaging those muscles, you're still loading those muscles, and the more intensity you apply to the contraction and the more kind of full body engagement that you can apply to that, the more intensity you can bring into those muscles and essentially build more strength and control through it. Now, again, another variation to this is let's get into that deep frog stretch again. Now, instead of squeezing your knees or lifting your feet off the ground, now instead we're going to press our feet into the floor. And this is a great one, similar to squeezing the knees to the ground, because you can put more effort, stronger press into the floor if you want to apply more loading. And that's going to help kind of work external hip rotation while in a deep internally rotated position. So there's so many different ways you can play with the movements, and just, you know, depending on what the goal is, every exercise provides a stimulus. Every exercise is a tool. And in order to be able to get the appropriate benefit, you need to know what the goal is, right? So we can play around with any exercise and make it fit in some kind of way towards what we're trying to achieve. We just need to be creative and see it in a slightly different way. So that's how we do it. Like our programming, we talk quite a bit about how you do not need any equipment. Sure, having some external loading is helpful when we start to really progress things like kettlebells, dumbbells, barbells. Like these things can help us loading certain things, but like a frog stretch, a frog position, you can't really load that unless you're doing that lift off where you're in that deep frog position, lifting your leg off the ground and you have an ankle weight on. That's how you can kind of load that position. But, you know, we're not in the 80s doing jazzercise anymore. How many people really have ankle weights laying around the house these days, right? So,
yeah,
I don't know how common that might be in the martial arts space. So
I used to, surprisingly common if you do Kung Fu or Taekwondo or Karate. I actually just got rid of my ankle weights like last year and then immediately regretted it because there was an exercise I wanted to do. And I think one of them had to do with hip rotation. I was like, dang it.
Right.
Why did I do that? Right? Now I'm going to have to buy a brand new pair of ankle weights. And I never did, but maybe I should.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that you can apply loading in some ways as long as you're creative. But I mean, hey, I always used to make fun of ankle weights until I actually got into the martial arts space, because what in the world of like barbell sports, which is where we spend a lot of our time focusing on, so CrossFit, weightlifting, and powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting. There's really no need for those things because we're not necessarily, like, the majority of the people are not being exposed to deep internal or external hip rotation the same way, right? Mm-hmm. So we essentially talk to our people saying you don't need equipment, you don't need anything in order to actually make some serious mobility gains. You just need a little bit of space. You need to be willing to put some work in because this should not be easy. This is going to be a challenging pursuit, but you don't need anything. Just effort.
Right. How would grappling and striking, would the mobility training programs look different between the two of those, or would they be pretty similar?
Well, if we go back to what I was just saying about each exercise is a tool, each exercise provides a stimulus. Any program is going to could look vastly different. Like you and me, if we had the same goals, our programs would likely still look quite different, right? So it totally depends on where you're starting. Totally depends on your pain points. Like if certain ranges of motion are causing you pain, then that's an obstacle we need to overcome. And we may need to, you know, pivot and find a different approach. So it doesn't matter necessarily what you're trying to achieve. I think the program will generally look relatively different. That being said, there are some functions of the body that are just going to be universally applicable that are worth putting effort towards, right? So ankle dorsiflexion, hip internal rotation and extension, spinal flexion and thoracic extension and rotation, like full spinal flexion, because that's a very commonly compromised position for a lot of people. A lot of people will sustain injuries in deep spinal flexion because there's a ton of lack of preparedness there. Nobody really trains spinal flexion. So the moment they get exposed in those ranges of motion, there's some issues that will come up because we're all training in neutral spine, yeah, right? Do your deadlifts with neutral spine, squat with neutral spine. Don't ever flex your spine under load because you'll get fucked.
Yep.
That's not necessarily the case. That's not how we choose to perceive it. That's not how our bias sees things. Instead, we look at what's commonly compromised, and we expose people to it in a very strategic and gradual and progressive way to ultimately make them more resilient within it. So when they're exposed and get stacked in jiu-jitsu, you're not concerned that your disc is going to explode out of your back, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, that to say that there's various things, there's various functions of the body that that are universal. It doesn't matter what your sport is, doesn't matter what you're trying to do, these things are going to benefit you in the long run for life in general, right? These things are going to make your life more enjoyable because you're going to move better and feel better as a result. But the nuances, the fine details, that's where things start to get a little bit more complex.
Right. Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. I know that jiu-jitsu, it's the injury cycle of, if you do proper technique, you won't get your back hurt like shooting on a double on a heavy guy or trying to stand up and guard or something like that, but the guy's got control of your head and your coach is screaming posture at you, so you're trying to power posture out of a necktie, and so you get hurt because you're trying to power. You're not used to building strength in those compromised positions, and then you get hurt because your coach told you to do it, and then your coach is like, "Well, you got hurt because you didn't do proper technique, right?" And then coach also has you saying, "Well, when you get tired, this is when the real training starts." So you're like constantly putting yourself in these compromised positions, but nobody is ever helping you get stronger in that position. Yeah, it's a pet peeve of mine. Coaches being stupid.
Well, hey, and I feel like this is a good time to just kind of interject and say that sometimes there's no amount of preparation that'll save you from an injury, right? Like there's certain situations, like injuries, when you're competing at a high level or training at a high level, even, and just pushing yourself to that degree, injuries are inevitable. It's part of the process. Now, the thing is, you'll want to, it's like a battle. Which one are you going to choose? The potential injuries and the, or sorry, the inevitable injuries through the process of getting stronger, doing a physical hobby that you love and whatever, or the injuries and pain and discomfort of weakness and muscle atrophy and lack of bone density. Like, which one are you going to choose? I think for me, either way, I'm going to experience some kind of shit. I'm going to be going with the one that's going to make me feel like a badass in the meantime and making me feel stronger and limiting the likelihood of me resulting in a risk of injury versus, you know, if I wasn't training, wasn't being exposed to these ranges of motion, and then I tried to do jujitsu, dude, like you're going to have a bad time at some point. Like the rate of injury risk in jujitsu is very high, right? Like shoulder issues, neck issues, hip issues, like knee pain, knee injuries, fingers for sure. That's kind of out of like, that's if your fingers get caught in a gi or something like that, you're not going to do mobility training on your fingers. So
no, and it happens on accident too. Like, it's like, your fingers hurt because you did the grip wrong. It's like, I didn't start the grip wrong. It got wrong in the chaos because the dude did something crazy and my fingers got caught before I could get them out.
Yeah, that happened to me actually. And this was before, so earlier on, probably a few months into jiu-jitsu, one of the habits that I had was like an illegal grip on the pant leg was like getting my fingers in the bottom
inside, you know,
like
in
the, so I would mentally, like as I'm rolling, I'm not thinking about it, I'm just going for a grip. And then I would see that my hand's there. So I would pull my hand out and try to grab on the outside of the pant leg. But if at one point my fingers got caught in there and the guy kicked or rolled around or whatever, and it just wrapped around my finger and then twisted the tip of it, and like that type of stuff just happens randomly, right? Or if like your toe gets caught in a mat, like between the mats, you know, those cracks, happens all the time.
Like or just in a random place inside the gi jacket, because jujitsu people never fix their gi.
Yeah,
exactly. My fingers have gotten caught too. Like I reach really quick for a collar grip. I actually don't do gi anymore. I just do no gi, and the finger injuries like basically never happen. Actually, a lot of injuries never happen because you don't have the leverage on the neck and the back.
Right. But
the game is faster, however.
Much faster. It's
a little bit, so it's a little more. It's demanding on your cardio, but it feels to me like it's a bit less injury prone overall than the gi, because the gi is just always, especially if you play against someone bigger, it's like, you're playing against someone bigger, you have all this leverage. I'm like, and they have the guy who's bigger and stronger has even more leverage on me because I'm giving him, I have these handlebars for him to hold.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Like, I never really kind of put two and two together like that. But yesterday was my first no-gi class in like 6 months. Just the way the schedule works out, I'm never able to make that class. But yesterday I made it happen. And every time I go, I'm like mind blown at how much more conditioning it applies, because the game is so fast. Everything's slippery. You're able to move out of things much easier. It's harder to catch things. So you're constantly moving, trying to get something else or escape something else. So there's a lot more movement. Whereas again, as you said, with like a bigger guy in the gi, if they grab you, if they get a grip on you, and generally they got bigger, stronger hands or whatever, their grip strength is strong, it's hard to get them, get their grip off. So you're like, okay, let's just go for the ride then.
Yeah. A guy who's 6 foot two, 250 pounds, okay shape. And oh, by the way, he also paints and like does plumbing and stuff every day. So he has an actual vice for a hand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, just do the proper technique with the maximum leverage every time he grabs your collar. Dude, shut up.
Dude, nothing short of like a foot on the chest.
It doesn't exist. You're playing Dungeons and Dragons, dude. Stop saying that.
That's hilarious. Yeah, the only way I can get out of that is if I like put my foot on the dude's chest and kick him off, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, dude, you have to create as much leverage as possible. And if you're getting fatigued, it's really hard, man. Like, yeah, when you're fresh, you can maybe get out of some of those positions on a really big guy. But the more you train, you know, you train throughout the course of an hour and a half, you end up matched with a big guy again, which I think is where injuries happen a lot. You know, that's like, what are you going to do? You end up just tapping, or you're kind of, you know, you're at his mercy, or you have to find some other little area to wedge your knee in at some point. Like, you know, just take your little openings where you can, because you really can't dictate the game at that point, which is why I kind of like Nogi better, because there's a little bit more to work with.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, I agree. There's definitely some pros and cons to both. I do prefer Nogi as well. And I think that generally that's kind of where the sport's going anyways. Like,
yeah,
Gi training seems to be more like of a traditional approach these days, mm-hmm. seeing as a lot of competitions are geared more towards Nogi, and it's just a more combat style, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much that makes sense. But anyways.
It's like judo. They don't want to let go of the...
Yeah,
yeah. Aesthetic. Yeah.
I'm down with it too, though. I enjoy the gi. It's a cool element, and I'm learning grips differently and stuff, and that's fun. But yeah, I find that I've been, again, doing it for like a year and a half. I have two stripes, nothing fantastic, absolutely nothing special. But throughout that entire year and a half, I'm one of the smaller guys in the class. Like, I'm just under 6 feet, 165 to 175 pounds on a good day. You know what I mean? And so I'm naturally often on the bottom, like just being pounded, fucking tons of pressure. So my game has really developed into a very, like, the foundation of my game has been very defensive. So I've learned very well how to regain guard, how to hold on to guard, how to expose different opportunities from guard. And I think that that's a really cool foundation to build, is like not much offensive game whatsoever, other than like a really powerful defensive game. And then from there, you can kind of build on top of that and learn more offensive movements and like get more strategy from in terms of like submissions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Once you start applying that defensive move patterns and defensive foundation to like sweeps and stuff like that.
For sure. Yeah, man. Cool, dude. This has been really fun. Where can people find you? And you can plug anything you want here.
You could check us out on Instagram. We talk a lot about barbell mechanics. Like, a lot of what we do is speaking to the strength patterns, like squats, deadlifts. And if you do Olympic weightlifting as well, clean snatches, like, we talk a lot about these things. So you can check us out on Instagram and you'll see a lot of advice and tips around how you can approach your mobility training regarding that stuff and apply it to however you want in your own game. So primal.mobility on Instagram, that's where you'll find us there. Facebook, Primal Mobility. And you can check out our website, primalmobility.com. We have a lot of different programs that can help improve the mobility, like strength through the ranges of motion. And then we're also leaning into a lot of course development as well. So if you're looking to learn more about how to use this approach and how to coach this approach to your people, we're getting more and more jiu-jitsu guys and girls coming through our certification courses and stuff like that. There's a lot of benefit there. So check us out. Check out our website. There's all the information you might need in there.
Awesome. I know that a lot of my listeners are jiu-jitsu coaches, so I encourage all my listeners to check that out.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. I love the chat. It was good. And I definitely continue to learn a little bit about jiu-jitsu, and you were a big help in that today too.
Oh, yeah. Glad to help. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks so much for listening to the Combat Learning Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. It really helps us out. Finally, this episode, including the intro music, is produced by Micah Peacock. Thanks in advance, and I'll see you on the next episode.